Welcome to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast. We're Kate and Liam, married bisexuals a decade into our non-monogamous journey.
We've been having sex with our friends for 10 years, and we're still madly in love with each other.
We're the authors of the Monogamous Marriage blog, where we've been overthinking sex and love since 2016. This podcast is the place where we process our sexual adventures in real time.
We are not experts, and nothing we say should be mistaken for professional advice. This show contains mature language and sexual content, so if you're under 18, it isn't for you. But if you're a fellow overthinker and you're not freaked out by unfiltered conversation, you're going to feel right at home.
For those of you who aren't aware, this is the third part of a discussion that started with my desire to date another woman and the stress that unleashed in our relationship. If you haven't listened to parts one and two, and especially if you like to listen in on people struggling mightily in real time, you should probably listen to those episodes first. Anyway, part two ended with you in a fragile place, and I thought, that can't be the last word on this subject between us. And in the meantime, our efforts have all come together to actually bring us to a really good place.
Yeah, and we had so many people reach out to us after the first two episodes of our Dating Separately saga and say that either they identified with this particular situation or they had a different situation but similar feelings, and it seemed to really touch people. So I think it would be helpful to have a more hopeful and uplifting ending to this story. So for the people out there who are identifying with our different sides of this issue, they can see that there's hope, that we did come together in the end and find a solution that worked for both of us.
Just to recap, when we finished the last episode, it ended with me saying, "Baby, I really, really love you." And you saying, "I love you too." In a voice so weak, I had to triple the signal just to make it show up. So that's where we left off. Not in a great place. We arrived at some kind of understanding of each other, but I think the understanding was all in the head, and our hearts were still deep in the battle.
Right. So that was 2 weeks ago now,
mm-hmm.
And that episode was recorded 2 weeks after your separate date. So
right.
We are now 1 month out from the date that caused so much hurt. So we are here to give the 1 month later report.
All right. I think we need to pick up this story in our bedroom one night.
Where all the good things happen.
Yeah, and some not so good things happen, as you're about to find out. I'm waiting for you to come upstairs. I'm feeling like we've had a good day and that we're in a good place, and I have no idea what's about to hit me.
Right. The way I deal with things is, if I'm faced with a problem, I research the shit out of it.
Yes, you
until
do.
I feel like I have a really good handle on what's going on and I have all the information I can get. So that's how I approached this problem. I had been listening to countless podcasts on jealousy and communicating through conflict and attachment styles and polyamory. And I had been re-listening to our therapy sessions with Catherine because she sends us an audio file after, which is really helpful. Mm-hmm. I had been re-listening to our two podcasts. I think I listened to part one and two 4 times each.
Wow.
Really just trying to dig into this and figure out what the issue was. How could I understand myself and you better? You know, I just wanted to fix it. But one of the things that happened that wasn't helpful was, as I listened to our therapy sessions or our counseling sessions, in the one before the date, you were very clear about saying the appeasing things I wanted to hear, which were, "This is just one date. I'm not asking you for any more than that. I'm okay with it being one date. I've communicated that to Caitlin." And all of that sounded good before the date happened. And then in our next session, 1 week after the date, you were already asking for another date in ways that were not overtly pushy, but words like, if your partner experiences something good, you should want your partner to have more of that good thing. And for me, that was enraging. And there were a couple of other inconsistencies before the date and after the date. Things that you said you wouldn't do that you actually did. And listening to them side by side made those differences so glaring. I was getting more and more angry as I listened because I felt like this is the story of my fucking life. I am a doormat. I have always been a doormat. I'm such a pleaser. I'm such a, you know, anxious attacher that I just go along with what other people want to do all the time. And I ignore what I want and I acquiesce and I give and I give and I give and people keep taking and taking and taking. And as I listened to this, my inner adolescent protector just jumped right out and I was furious. So I stormed into the room, arms waving, saying, "This is what I'm talking about. This is how I feel all the time."
I could not believe the state that you were in. And I was trying to listen. And, you know, I heard you say, you know, you made promises before the date that you immediately went back on after the date. Anyway, you just brought up the example a moment ago of me saying, how could you not want a good thing for your partner to continue, or some variation on that? And I thought, yeah, I kind of remember saying that, but you were picking up what you felt was an emotionally coercive undertone to that statement.
Yes. And, you know, that was something we brought up in our next session with Catherine, which is when you ask for things, because I am a pleaser and because I feel like our success as a couple rests on me meeting all of your needs, you just expressing that you want something is enough to feel coercive to me. So we need to find a way to come to a middle ground where you're allowed to ask for things and I need to not hear them as pressure. But you also need to allow me to say no and not continue to put pressure on me. So that's one of the tight ropes we're going to try to walk as we go forward.
Yeah, and that was tricky for me. But I want to get back to something that you said earlier, because you're talking about being a doormat. I've always been a doormat, and people just walk over me and take, take, take. And there were two things that I didn't connect with there. One, I don't see you as a doormat, and I see this whole podcast series, not to mention the hours and hours of conversation we had, as evidence that you actually don't get walked all over. When I asked for a date, you were very clear and unambiguous in your no.
Right, but who ended up going on a date?
Yeah, at the end of some negotiation, but it wasn't from your failure to stand up for yourself. Anyway, there's another thing too. If you can see the expression on her face right now, it's like,
who won this one, guys?
Yeah, but at what cost, I might say. But anyway.
Well, exactly, because I was a fucking doormat and I was resentful of that after.
But what I thought was interesting too is that you have this script in your emotional hard drive about being a doormat. And this situation fed right into that. And I'm not even arguing whether you are or aren't a doormat. Actually, I don't think you are. But anyway, I'll let that sit for a second. But to say, I also have the doormat feeling in my life. I'm a pleaser. I like to get along and kind of give in if that's what it takes. But my script is, hey, I just like to make things nice and easy for people. I can actually give them their way, and I'm smart enough to figure out a way later to make it work, if not totally for me, at least not totally against me. And this is not an intelligence thing, because you have the same intelligence that I have, but you're running a negative script. Your inner doormat feeling stings you like a denunciation, while my inner doormat feeling registers as a minor nuisance that I can work around. So that struggle you have, which is a self-esteem struggle, was amplifying our disconnection.
So we woke up the morning after that meltdown, having not talked about it. I just went to sleep. I was emotionally exhausted from, you know, doing this for weeks and weeks.
I think we declared a ceasefire, if I remember right, and said, that's it, but that we were no closer to resolution.
Right. So we woke up the next morning, and I thought, okay, so now we have to talk about that. But the first thing you said to me was, what is the most relaxing thing you can imagine? And I said, I don't know, sitting somewhere warm by the water with sand between my toes.
And that's when I said, I would like to send you away to just such a place to have some time without me.
So that was not what I expected to hear the morning after my my biggest blow up of this whole process. So I was a little bit suspicious. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, what's the ulterior motive here? Are you offering to send me away so that you can have a date? Is there something going on that I'm not aware of yet? But you insisted, no, that you'd like to send me away, that us spending all this time together talking was just exhausting us both, and we both needed some time to just cool out and regroup and refresh. And you thought the best way to do that would be without you. And I said, well, okay. That sounds awesome, but I'm not going on vacation by myself.
And that's when I shared part two of my plan, which was to send you away with your girlfriend, April.
Right. So again, I'm very suspicious.
Okay, that's terrible, but go on.
Well, I mean, how can I go away on a vacation paid for by you with my girlfriend and not feel beholden to you?
I think what I was doing was I was actually testing myself because, you know, I had made a promise that I would not bring up the subject of separate dating again and leave it in your court. So this was almost like the ultimate test. Could I actually send you away on a vacation with your girlfriend, the ultimate 4-day separate date, and not want the same for myself? But I felt it was important because I did not want to link my desires as a quid pro quo to your desires. I wanted yours to stand alone. And you know what the secret is? I actually was turned on and excited in a compersion sense by the idea of you going away with her.
Right. So that was exciting, and we planned it. And in just a few days now, April and I will be heading to Miami for 4 days. So we will obviously have to report back on that later. Mm-hmm. But another interesting thing that happened in that week was you had a solo date with a man. So
yes,
as part of this whole experiment of dating separately, I suggested that I would be much more comfortable with you having a solo date with a man than a woman.
Which is easy to say, but not so easy to set up. I can't just snap my fingers, not only because I'd have to find the right man, but I would have to find that desire and energy within myself. And, you know, as I've said on our bisexuality episode, I'm attracted to men. I see the sexual potential in men, but it's easier for me to see that in women. So generating a date wouldn't just be easy, except it was, because within days, I got a note from a guy we knew. I was talking to him about something else, and he said, by the way, I would like to get together with you one-on-one sometime. And he's a guy I've played with before, but always in a two-on-two setting, never one-on-one.
Right. So when you set this up, I was excited about it. So everything in my body responded differently to this idea than your other date. So when I heard that it was going to be with a man, instantly, I was excited. I was turned on. Everything in me said, yes, do this. I like this idea. So the day came. I left the house. I went and spent the afternoon with my friend to give you guys the space and the time to do what you wanted to do. So how did that go?
It went fantastic. It was really great. And, you know, it's funny because as a businessman, I'm used to having wonderful, wonderful plans that don't work out. But this was actually a plan that worked out exactly as I hoped it would. He and I had a great time together. But I'm wondering why you think you were able to look on my date with a man so very differently than you looked on the potential of a date with a woman.
It's easy. For me, I've always been okay with the idea of you having sex with other people. I've maintained that through all of these discussions. And even if you have to do it without me, I mean, that's a little tougher to swallow, but I can understand why. But the thing that has always been threatening to me, the thing that was really brought out in this previous date with the woman, was my real fear that you will fall in love with someone else and leave me for that person. And because I know that your sexual desire for men and your, you know, relational desires with men are far less powerful than your desire for women, I feel less like there's a possibility that you will fall in love with a man and leave me.
Do you think there's a heteronormative prejudice in there that, of course, you couldn't fall in love with a man because men aren't as amazing as women are?
Oh, well, I don't know about that. But there's probably some heteronormative stuff going on there. But it's more that I understand you and how you work and how your bisexual desire works. And I know it's more like a 70-30 kind of split in favor of your desire for women over men. So I feel far less threatened by this situation with a man and far more aroused because I really do like the guy-on-guy action. And the thought that you are enthusiastic for it and that you might have some hot stories to recount later was exciting. So I think I got the closest to the like hot wife / hot husband feeling there, where there was some sexual anticipation about what this would bring about for you and then by extension for me.
Right. So there were definitely some hot stories, but I'm going to save them for now for maybe a separate either blog post or podcast. But speaking of things going to plan in an unexpected way, I had always said that if I went on a solo date, that it wouldn't just be about that moment with that individual, but that I would bring something back, not only to myself, but also to our relationship, that it would make it better. And the basis of my argument was that the confidence that I gained from being in what is to me the best position, which is one-on-one with another attractive person, I would bring that confidence back so that when we go into two-on-two and three-on-three, I guess it's not three-on-three, it's three times two or whatever the math is, I would be able to bring that back to group sex situations. So you were dubious of that. And of course, you had every right to. I couldn't prove it. I didn't know it. But again, I had a plan that actually worked because we went to a party last Friday night. Mm-hmm. Right. And there were three couples there. So two and two and two. And it was kind of like after we got past the dinner, and this was with Dominic and Maria, who we've written about so much, just great friends who have been in Italy for 3 months. And they brought along another couple named Sam and Lisa, who we had met before and actually had invited to one of our parties. So,
but had never played with.
Oh, but I had never even remotely played with her. So as often happens at these kinds of events, there was the dinner and the chatting and some games. And then it was time for everyone to take their clothes off and have sex. And it was kind of like musical chairs, like the music starts and let's see who pairs off with who. And all of a sudden, I am sitting on a sofa with Lisa, who I find really attractive. But in the past, that would have been a situation that did not work for me. I'd feel like, ugh, she's here because her only choice is to be with me. I'm the leftover guy and I don't even know what I'm feeling for her. But I decided to just go with my enthusiasm and go with an assumption that she would actually find me attractive and enjoy what I had to offer. So that is brand new. And I really think that that came from my date with Caitlin.
Right. So I was in the room with Dominic, mm-hmm, getting pounded in the ass. So good.
Yeah, you're my hero, babe.
He's really good at that. and I heard you and some other woman noises, and I thought, way to go, Liam. And after we were done, we went down the hall, and sure enough, there you are, still with her. And it looked like you were wrapping up what had been a fairly long and good time. So yes. I was happy for you.
Yeah, but you hadn't seen the fucking part. So I did this weird thing. I think I was very smooth up to that point. Like I was James Bond smooth with Lisa. But sure. Then when you came in, I said, hey, by the way, you missed all the fucking. And I know that sometimes you think I don't do it when you're not there to see me. So I just want to let you know what happened.
You're like still a little between boy. Her legs. Like, I did it. I did it.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. But I would say up to that moment, I was not embarrassing. I actually played it
very
really
suave.
Well. Yeah, thank you.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's been a hard fight.
So that was a good night. Mm-hmm. And this was one of those crazy weekends where we actually had two parties in a row.
Right.
So we'd had a good night on Friday. And then on Saturday, we were going to a much larger party where we were going to see Caitlin and this guy that you had had the date with and a whole bunch of our other friends.
And knowing we were going to see Caitlin specifically that evening, I felt that we really should speak on the phone in advance of being face to face. And the big reason I did that is because of the podcast. So if you think about experiences you've had that maybe have been fraught in the past, you deal with them with the memories. You might speak privately with the person, but you don't hear your story dissected for thousands of people on the internet. And that's what Caitlin had to live through. And she took it with good grace. And she knows that we write a blog and have a podcast. In fact, we've written about her and her partner, Colin, before. But this was very different than any situation that she had been in before. So I really felt for her. I thought, you know, she might have been taking a beating. When she hears you cry, at some level, maybe she thinks, I'm the cause of that person crying on this podcast. So I thought, we really need to talk before we get there this evening.
Right. So you said that you were going to make this phone call, and mm-hmm, I wholeheartedly supported that. And then you said, actually, can you leave the room? I'd like to do this in private. And then I was like, what the fuck?
I know. And you know like, what?
We are so fresh out of this. That was a really bad move.
Yeah. And you know what? That's an example of what happened continuously over the last month, which is, I would say something off the top of my head, and I can see now why, I guess kind of boneheaded. Why did I not want you to be there? It was just, I think I felt a little bit shy talking to her about this thing. So I just said it. Of course, when you reacted that way, I thought, yeah, why do I want you to leave the room? You can hang around if you want.
Well, I didn't. I actually left the room.
Oh, I know.
We didn't talk about it until after. So I left the room. You had a conversation that I could only hear snippets of from your side. And then you came in and said, here's the phone. Can you reassure Caitlin? And I was like, dude.
I didn't say it that way.
You asked me to leave the room. You are on your own.
Yeah, but I, of course, realized as I was talking to her that it would be important, just like it was important for me to reestablish my connection with her, that it was important for you to do the same. And because there was goodwill, she was saying she felt so sorry for you listening to your side of the story on our podcast. And you had said similar sympathetic things towards her. And I just thought it was important to say them to each other. So I didn't exactly hand the phone. I think I covered up the phone and said, would you mind speaking to Caitlin just for a moment? And you very graciously said yes.
And I said, I'll do it for Caitlin, not for you.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever it takes.
No, I didn't say that. I thought that. Anyway, so yeah, so we had a brief conversation. I reassured her that none of my bad feelings were ever about her. This conflict wasn't about her. It was just about us handling things wrong and my insecurities and fears that were brought up as a result of that. So I said I was looking forward to seeing her again. And I actually thought it was good that we were going to be put in the same room so close after the date, because I didn't want things to draw out and to feel more awkward the more time we didn't see each other. So I was looking forward to giving her a hug, actually.
Right. But that party did not go as smoothly as you might think from the foregoing. And after this break, we're going to talk about exactly what happened there. Because this is a special episode, we're only going to take one break and try to keep our announcements brief.
So let's first cover the upcoming events. We are going to be in Montana at Glacier National Park with our dear sexy friends, Naughty Jim, from May 7th to 11th for their outdoor adventure extravaganza. Then we're going to be at Podcastapalooza Colourpop in Palm Springs. That's from June 3rd to 6th. And this event is not yet sold out. So if you'd like to join us in Palm Springs in June, we would love to meet you there. Go to our website to find information and a link for registration. We are also going to be in Antigua with Room 77 for their Summer Bang 2022 extravaganza. Did I already say extravaganza? Anyway, that's going to be from July 29th to August 5th. I am going to be celebrating my birthday there, and that event is also not yet sold out. So if you want to come help sing happy birthday or give me some birthday spankings, we would love to see you in Antigua.
One other thing we want to mention is that we had a bit of trouble with our Patreon account in that it turns out Patreon's kind of sex negative and was challenged by some of our material. So,
and we are very naughty.
Yeah, there's that too. So we have since recovered, but we have a new address. So if you're interested in supporting us, you know, we always do the blog and the podcast for free. But some people have said, no, we want to give back to you. And we really appreciate that. The address is www.patreon.com/Kate_and_Liam. So that's patreon.com/Kate and Liam. And now back to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast.
So the night of the party was kind of a strange night for me. It was half people that we knew well, and the other half were brand new people. And normally in a situation like that, I would be quite happy to make new connections and talk to new people and have some fun playtime as I had the night before with Dominic. But that night, I was not feeling very social. I was not feeling very sexual. So I spent most of the night just talking to our closest friends there and drinking a lot.
Right.
And as people started to break off to get changed and to go down to the playrooms, I drifted toward the couch in the dark living room. Caitlin came out and joined me, and we had a brief conversation, and we had had a nice hug earlier. And I just felt like, I don't want to do this right now. I just want to check out. So
you didn't want to do what exactly?
I don't want to play. I don't want to be sexual. I'm not feeling it at all.
Anyone who's ever been at a party with Kate will know those are the most unexpected words you would ever expect to hear from her mouth, because she is that person who is the first to take her clothes off, the first to start engaging in sexual activity. So for her to be on the couch, drifting off to sleep, half drunk, is like, who is this person?
Right. So I told both you and Caitlin separately that you had my full, wholehearted blessing to go and have sex, because this was a setting that generally I was comfortable in. I just wasn't feeling very sexual. So I lay down on the couch. I even got a blanket and covered up and tried to go to sleep.
So this was a real turning point moment for us, I think, because I'm there at a party with Caitlin. My wife has just said to me and to her, I want you two to have sex. But something inside of me said, this isn't feeling right. So Caitlin and I had a long conversation in the kitchen after you went to sleep. And we were really talking about our views of what had gone on in the last few weeks. And she had had some concerns with her partner as well and had to work through them. It wasn't just a one-sided situation.
Can I jump in and say it was actually really reassuring to me to hear that her partner was having trouble with this as well. And he and I had exchanged some texts. And it was nice to see that it wasn't just me being an hysterical female, right? That her male partner was also struggling.
Yeah, it's so tempting to genderize these things as, oh, that's a real woman's issue or that's a real man's issue. But this was just the perfect illustration of the fact that those attachment style issues can come up for men just as often as they can come up for women. So you had given us your permission and Caitlin was looking great and we were bonding, but I felt like this is not feeling right. So at a certain point, Caitlin went upstairs and said, I'm going to get changed and I'll see you downstairs. And by the time she came back, I figured out I should not do this. You have pushed yourself to try to be agreeable in a way that's against your wishes. And you know what? I am now at this point in this long, long process, finally attuned to where your heart is at. So when Caitlin came downstairs looking great, I said, you know what? I think I'm just going to take Kate home now and you go downstairs and enjoy yourself. And I wanted nothing more for her at that moment than for her to have a great evening and to have maybe a kind of escape from the stress that we had imposed on her as we worked our way through this separate dating issue.
Right. So you woke me up and I asked if you were all done, expecting that you had had your fun with Caitlin and it was time for us to go home. And when you told me that you actually didn't play with her, I started sobbing. And I think it was a really healing moment to see that the thing that I had been wanting during our conflict, which was you to see me and to prioritize my feelings and to offer comfort, even if I was being a little irrational, that lesson had sunk in and you were applying it here. And you would have been completely within your rights to go in and play with her. I had given you permission, but you were able to read me well enough to see that even though I said those words, everything in my behavior and body was saying something else. So I really appreciated you taking care of me that night.
Yeah, well, it actually came easily because I was seeing the world through your eyes. And so I agree with you. That was a real breakthrough, but we hadn't gotten all the way yet. There were still situations cropping up where the conflict felt fresh again. And one of those was one morning after going to the gym, we decided to treat ourselves to breakfast at a place that's become a favorite of mine. And as we pulled into our parking spot, we were speaking kind of dispassionately and level-headedly about what had been going on. And I was saying, you know, I need to get past my defensiveness on the moral side of always trying to defend myself from any accusation that I had acted poorly. And you said, but so much of this is not about that. It's just about practical differences between what we both want. And I said, no, that's not the case. And I brought up an example. And sure enough, you were able to point out to me that this thing that had nothing to do with morality had been turned by me into a morality issue. Like, The way they say, you know, if you're a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And if you're defensive, like Liam is, every issue turns into a referendum on your morality.
Right. We were talking about that turning point where I went from feeling like it's okay for you to go on a date to you saying, I think I'd like to do this once a month, and me responding badly to that, feeling very angry, not angry, threatened. And that was the point where you felt like I was saying you are a bad person. We kept coming back to that moment because that was the turning point moment from everything was okay to everything was not okay. And what we boiled it down to in returning to this moment was that what happened there was you said something that threatened my security, suggesting that you have a relationship with her that I felt would become emotional if you were to have a once a month date. That was a threatening thing to me. And I responded from my place of fear and said, I don't feel good about that. But what you heard, instead of hearing me saying, I don't want you to go on multiple dates, what you heard was, you are bad for wanting multiple dates.
Right.
And that is not what I was implying, but that's what you were fighting against for the next 5 days of our conflict.
It's interesting because I'd been having that fight since the beginning. And, you know, when you made that point, I thought I wasn't conceding the point right away, but I did acknowledge that, hey, maybe there's something there. I'm going to think about that a little bit more. I'm going to stress test that idea by running through a few of our discussions. And sure enough, over the next 24 hours, I could see how almost every practical concern you had been turned by me into a judgment about my goodness.
Right. You know, we had just been miscommunicating or misinterpreting, and it had snowballed into this big, long thing.
So the next day when we had our what's turned out to be our most recent session with Catherine of Expansive Connections. She's been our therapist throughout this whole process. One of the things we dealt with was the very large difference between our ways of processing things, specifically processing our own behaviors and our own capacity for change. So I tend to look at myself and my history from a perspective that you could say is very self-compassionate, or you could say is excuse making. So I tend to look at things I've done, even when people would say you've fallen short, and say, oh, but I understand why I did that. I was doing the best I could with what I knew, and I move on from there. But your approach is very different.
Yeah, I'm very self-critical.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said earlier in the episode, I tend to revisit things over and over and over again in an attempt to help me understand basically where I went wrong and how I can do better next time. So I really agonize over my mistakes. I could write you lists of all the things I regret or feel badly about in my life. And when I ask you, what things do you feel badly about? Where do you feel like you've made mistakes or you carry guilt? You honestly cannot come up with a single time when you've done something you regret or feel guilty about or felt like was the wrong choice. So for me, that's always been a struggle because I feel like what moral person can walk through the world at 60 years of age and say, I've never made a mistake. I have no regrets. I don't feel guilty about anything. I'm like, what kind of psychopath are you?
Right. And this has a bearing on the conversation because you're looking for signs of good faith from me, that you're very aware of all that you're going through. You're consuming books on the topic and podcasts and agonizing late into the night.
And saying, hey, listen to this session with Catherine with me. And you're like, nah, I'm good. And I'm feeling like, well, you just don't care about our relationship. I'm putting in all this work. I'm doing all of this, you know, self-analysis and trying to do better and learn and get stronger. And you're just like, do-do-do, everything's fine.
Yeah. And of course, that's not accurate. I am actually going through my version of that process. So that means I think the best way I can describe it is I put a query in my hard drive. This makes me sound like Data from Star Trek.
You have been accused of being robotic in the past.
I know, and that's an unfair accusation, but more on that some other time.
Not by me, by the way.
Not by you.
By your ex.
Yes, but I don't think you disagreed with her vehemently on that topic.
Not lately.
No. So anyway, my approach is to put that query or an aspiration to my hard drive. So I want to understand Kate better. And then while I sleep, while I run, when I'm at the gym, when I'm watching a hockey game, my mind is working actually quite busily on resolving the issue of getting to where I want to be. And so I can get to a place where we have a fight one night, and the next morning I'm suggesting that you go to Miami with your girlfriend. So clearly a change has taken place, but it's not because I listened to a podcast or did research on the subject. I just have this largely subconscious process that kind of gets me from point A to point B. It's just different than yours.
And as a person who's used to hustling, I was watching you being very calm and unconcerned about the fate of our relationship. And I was feeling kind of resentful that I'm putting in all this time and energy and working really hard to make us better, and you're just watching hockey. So when we talked through this with Catherine, she was able to kind of help us understand that we are just different in this. And while I'm an overanalyzer, overachiever, overperformer, whatever, you know, you just have a different way of dealing with things and coming to understand them. And in the end, ultimately, you know, we're both here doing the best we can for each other and for the relationship. And I need to stop expecting to see from you the same behaviors that I exhibit and I expect from myself.
And that was the crux of this whole thing. If you look at an overarching, for all you philosophy majors, an epiphenomenological perspective.
Nice word.
We were doing the exact same thing, which was struggling to connect with someone whose heart and mind operates differently than our own. That was really the crux of the matter.
So to get back to the dating thing, as soon as you offered to send April and I on this trip, I started feeling really hypocritical because I felt like I cannot go on a vacation with my girlfriend and continue to say that you are not allowed to date separately.
Why?
So, well, just I believe in equity, maybe not equality. I can't send you on a trip with your girlfriend yet.
Okay.
But I do believe in equity. So if you're going to be gracious and generous and supportive of me in this relationship, then I should at least find the strength in myself to give you a little more support in your project.
Even though I said 20 times, do not link these things. Like, I am happy to send you on this trip. And I'm happy for my own reasons. It gives me pleasure for you to go on this trip. So there was no pressure coming from me. Where was the pressure coming from?
Well, the same place pressure always comes from, within me. Right? So I want to be the partner who can say to the world, to our podcast audience, you did this great thing for me. I feel very grateful for it. And I want to give something in return. And so I've been doing the work in, you know, a very active way, which we just talked about. And I really do aspire to be stronger and more confident and more supportive of you and what you want, even if that is something separate from me. So I was trying to live up to my aspirations.
Right. Can I ask you, you mentioned the podcast audience. How big a factor was that, thinking I've got to actually talk about this before thousands of people? Was it a bit of a factor making you want to do something now rather than maybe later?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's the same impulse that I would have if I were talking to any of our friends to be able to say, Liam sent me to Miami with April. It was so nice. I was so grateful for that I wanted him to go on a date while I was away. So I was trying to get to that place where I could wholeheartedly, not reluctantly, say, yes, go on a date, have fun. And at first, you wanted to do that with Caitlin. And then after that night at the party, it became really obvious that things were now a little complicated.
Yeah, I actually did not think I could ask Caitlin on another date, that it was too raw, that there had been too much, I hate to say this, but drama around us. So we think of ourselves as the ultimate no-drama couple. Guess what? You can't listen to these two podcasts and say, hey, they're a drama-free couple. For better or for worse, we've kind of put it out there. Now, I will say in our defense, we very, very, very rarely, almost never allow that to be visible to other people. We have our stuff together when we are connecting with other couples. But yeah, it does happen. And I just felt like I can't say that to Caitlin. I felt like she would just put her hand up and say, whoa, I've got some processing to do over this. So I didn't feel she was an option, even though everything with her had gone so well on that first date.
So I continued to think about it, and I offered a couple more times to let you go out with Caitlin, but you couldn't really see a way forward to ask her out so quickly after the first date. So I thought, what would make me actually comfortable? Not just reluctantly comfortable. And I thought, I would like if you could maybe diversify your emotional investment. So instead of having multiple dates with the same woman, what if you had dates with multiple different women? So we had gone out for dinner with our friends, Jane and Roberto, who we hadn't seen in a while because of COVID. And I was reminded of how much I love those two and how comfortable I am with them. And of course, we talked through this recent drama, and they listened to the podcast as well. So they really wanted to talk to us because they've been thinking about going in a more polyamorous direction with their open relationship. So I came away from that dinner feeling like, ugh, I love those guys. And so a couple days later, I thought, what if you went out with Jane? I love Jane. And she knows very well how I feel about all this. We just talked about it. And she is so much like me. It's like, you know, if you were to clone Kate, it would be Jane in terms of how she thinks and approaches the world.
Right. And I had actually had that thought too, because I don't know if you remember, at dinner, I had talked about separate dating. And I even said to her, you know, you were on the short list of people who we considered when I decided to go out with Caitlin. And that was my, I guess, awkward attempt at a compliment. It's like, hey, you were on the short list. But I was trying to get across to her how attracted I was to her, to put the idea out there, hoping that she would say, oh, I'd do that. But of course, she didn't hit my bid, so to speak. And so,
and you made a similar joke in a text exchange between the four of us a few days later.
Right. Yeah, I was on it. But because she wasn't responding in the way that I had hoped, I just thought, you know what? Maybe she's not that interested. And it brings up a very sensitive point regarding separate dating, which is anytime you're interested in one half of a couple and you express that interest, you're risking offending the other party, that they'll say, why aren't I included? Or are you trying to break us up? And even the person you're interested in might feel like, oh, I was super comfortable with the dynamic with the four of us. Now you've made it weird by zeroing in on me and saying that you have special feelings for me. So there's a lot of risk there. So I guess I was hoping that by making some informal suggestions, /jokes, that they would communicate my intention in a non-threatening way, but it didn't really work.
Right. But because I really understand Jane and how she thinks, I said, you need to be more direct. You need to just say what you want and, you know, put it in a way that's very non-threatening and non-pushy, but just be straightforward. And you were feeling a little sheepish. You didn't want to get rejected. You didn't want to cause conflict in their relationship. So I said, you know what? I'm going to reach out to her privately and I'm just going to lay it out there.
And I thought, what a middle school solution. Like, it's literally back to 12-year-old Kate going to 12-year-old Jane, hey, 12-year-old Liam really likes you. He thinks you're cool and wants to know if you want to go out. But you know what? It was actually a fantastic idea.
Right. Well, we've had these kind of exchanges before where a woman has come to me and said, my man wants to try some bisexual shit with Liam. So, you know, that middle school thing, it still kind of works. If things are a little bit touchy, maybe it's easier for the people who are not directly involved to, you know, to have some sort of middleman who can convey the messages in a way that feel less threatening and vulnerable.
Yeah. And I actually thought a woman making this suggestion to another woman took all of the threatening dynamic away. It was just a what-if conversation between two friends.
Right. And because she knows that I responded really negatively to the last time you went on a date, I thought if I go to her and say, you know what, as part of the work I'm doing, I've really thought about who do I feel comfortable with and how can I allow Liam to continue to have these experiences. And I came up with you. I would be very happy if you're interested at all in this sort of thing, if you would go out with my husband. And so I just put it out there. I said, I'm comfortable with you. I'm the one who suggested this. And would you be interested? No pressure, of course. But if you would, he's into it. I'm into it. We love you guys.
Yeah. So you sent that message. I asked to proofread it before you sent it. And you pushed the send button, said, oops, Here it is if you want to read it now that it's out. So I read it and I felt like you represented the situation well. And maybe 20 long minutes later, your watch went ding, which indicated that you had an incoming message. And you said, basically, Jane said yes, Jane's in.
Mm-hmm. Not only was she in, she was enthusiastically in.
Yes.
So you suggested a weeknight dinner and then went out on a limb and said, and I could get a hotel downtown. And she said, yes, yes, yes.
Right. Yeah. Well, I said the hotel thing because I thought, you know what? She lives a little distance from us. So if I got a hotel close to where she lives, I could excuse it as just being something that makes sense for me logistically. Like after the date, I don't want to drive back home to our place in the suburbs. I'd rather just stay downtown. But what it means is if we're feeling it, sex is an option.
So that's the update. As of yesterday, that date was secured and you're making plans and I'm feeling good.
Right.
So I'm heading to Miami with April in 4 short days.
Right.
And you are going to have this date. And I honestly feel like I can give my wholehearted consent to this. So it's hard to fully understand how this moment is different from the moment we were in 6 weeks ago. It's not that I like or trust Jane more than Caitlin. I think it really is about the work we've done, all the brutal communication we've subjected ourselves to, the therapy we've gotten, the information I've sought out and I have found helpful. So the book Polysecure by Jessica Fern, we've mentioned that in the past couple of podcasts. That was very helpful. Several other podcasts I've listened to. And then that work with Catherine, it was all really helpful. And I think seeing a few steps taken toward each other in this process was really helpful in rebuilding our trust and the strong foundation that we thought we had before, but maybe we were just ignoring some of the gaps between us. This highlighted in a really profound way the places where we're different and how those differences can, you know, erupt under the right circumstances. So I went from someone who felt very confident in the lifestyle, who felt after 10 years of swinging that I'm not a jealous person, to realizing, oh shit, with the right trigger, I can become very, I don't like the word jealous, I can become very insecure and fearful. And so that wasn't a pleasant process to go through, but I think it was valuable. I think ultimately it helped us to grow and the healing has definitely started. We're not fully there, I'm sure. Just like so many of these things, there will be a button pushed at some point that will bring this to the surface again. But I think we've got some tools now to understand each other better and to communicate more effectively as we move forward.
Yeah, I think it was. I'm going to risk saying a real breakthrough. Like we arrived somewhere. When I said, you can go on this trip with April and I do not even want to go on a date while you're away. I want this to be all about you. And when you were able a few days later to say, I want you to go on a date with Jane. In fact, I'm going to help set it up for you. It was an indication of the distance that we had traveled with so much difficulty and so much anguish. But I think the main thing is, you know, we solved this problem. For now, you might say, but what have we learned from this? Have we actually traveled a distance or did we just sort of win the battle, but maybe not win the war?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the practical things that we've taken out of this and I'd like to kind of put in place going forward are some rules of engagement around asking for new things. Mm-hmm. So I feel like something that would be helpful for us would be to say, when asking for something new, you need to come to your partner, in this case, if it was you, you'd be coming to me, mm-hmm. with a deep understanding that if I'm going to ask for something, I need to be prepared to hear no to back down. So I think if we could put some sort of time limit around it. So I was kind of joking yesterday that we need to have like the rules of, you know, of a debate where you have 15 minutes to present your case.
Right.
I have 10 minutes to rebut, you have 10 minutes to rebut, and then we're moving on to the next issue. So we tend to both get really entrenched in our positions, and the more we push, the deeper we dig in. And it's not productive when we get to that place.
Right. So I definitely need to learn that. And when I hear myself making the same excellent argument over and over, I have to have some faith that you heard it the first time. I actually don't need to keep repeating it. It's not, the outcome is not going to get any better for me going over the same thing. And I think if I could suggest something for you, it's that recognizing when your partner, in this case, me, comes to you with an idea, I've got my hopes and dreams in my hands, and I'm passing them over to you because this is not like a hope and a dream of running a marathon where I just have to get up every morning, put on my shoes, and log the miles until I'm ready to run a marathon. This is something I need you for. I need an ally. I need an accomplice. So when I come to you with a plan, there's some real vulnerability there. I think Catherine said at one point, we might have mentioned this in the last podcast, that rather than saying no, saying, let's look at it again in this time period, or I can't do this, but I can do that, which is ultimately what you did. And you did so spectacularly well that your idea that I should involve different people makes total sense. Not because Caitlin's not fantastic. She is fantastic. But for your sense of safety, it's better if I'm not over invested in one person. I think that's a great idea. I think Jane and I are going to have a fantastic time. And that's because I listened to your suggestion. But it was only there to listen to because you actually said, I'm not going to finish this with a no. I can't do that, but I can do this. And your can do this was actually an improvement on my plan.
Yeah. So offering each other the not this, but maybe that formulation is helpful. So rather than just a straight no, saying, I can't do this, but here's something I can do. So again, trying to meet in the middle. Another thing we need to pay attention to going forward is remembering that if we have different opinions on something, it's not that one of us is wrong and one of us is right.
One thing I really want to do is take a completely different perspective on these issues when they come up. And that is, rather than saying, oh, there is a problem between you and I want to put the problem on the other side of the table. I want us to feel united in solving the problem. So in this case, I have an impulse. I want to have a separate date. That's not a thing between us. That is the issue that we're dealing with as a unified team. You want me to have my needs met. I want you to feel safe and secure. Now we're going to work together to solve that rather than seeing ourselves in opposition on either side of an issue. So now, before we end, I just want to take a moment. We've made this incredible journey, and it's taken us 3 podcast episodes to describe it. But basically, we went from me wanting something and you feeling reluctant to you finding a way to enthusiastically support what I wanted with some modification. So I wonder if you have advice for people out there who find themselves in the same situation.
Sure. Whether they're in the exact same situation or just the same kind of conflict where one partner wants something and the other partner feels nervous about it. So I think the things I've learned are, first of all, when you request something, it's okay to ask, but do not push. Because if you come up against resistance, especially if you see your partner in fight or flight mode, which can look like sadness or anger or withdrawal, they are not in a position to make a good decision, right? So if you ask for something that triggers your partner, that gets their lid flipped, you will not convince them by pushing more. In fact, you might do the opposite. You might actually get them to dig in more and be more entrenched in their position because they'll feel like you're fighting them. So ask, it's okay to ask, but if you get resistance, it's probably best just to let it drop for now. Instead, change tacks. Don't provide more logic and more arguments. Turn toward comfort. So give your partner the reassurance they need that they are safe and they are loved. And no matter what their answer is, ultimately, you two are going to be okay together. Then give it some time. Let the storm pass. So if big emotions were triggered, those need to come down. So the person needs to get out of that fight or flight state of mind. This could take a day or two. This could take a week or two. But just kind of gauge your partner's mood. And during that period, continue to be very reassuring and loving. Do not push during this period. Let them calm down. But don't let the topic drop completely. So if there's something that you really, really want that is so important to you that not having it will cause resentment, you need to keep talking about it. But you need to do this in a way that respects that your partner is allowed to say no. And you need to look for ways to make compromises. So if you can each take a step toward the other and try and accommodate your desires and your partner's fears and find a place in the middle where maybe you can both feel comfortable and happy, that is the best place to be. And finally, try not to be too scared of these conflicts. Don't avoid them, because if you're able to honestly look at yourself, these conflicts are a wonderful place to grow. They're a way to highlight your weaknesses and the places between you where maybe you could do some refining in terms of how you communicate and how you relate. So try to look at them as growth opportunities rather than fights. And just that kind of reframing might help you handle them better. It's not a fight to the death. It's here's a place where we can be better.
Right. Okay. Well, that's great. I think we finally reached the end of this epic saga.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be on to something more upbeat next time, just for the sake of variety. But for now, I just want to end by telling you again how much I love you and appreciate you and admire you for the effort you put into resolving this thing in a way that has left me completely satisfied.
Well, thanks, baby. And thank you for working with me on that project.
Look at us, all happy and smiley now. I love you, baby.
I really love you. As always, we would love to hear from you. The best way to get in touch with us is to email us at themonogamishmarriage@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, themonogamishmarriage.com, or our Twitter account, @monogamish1, where we're active daily. Thanks for being with us. See you next time.